Good day. Welcome to another episode of the Audible Local Ledger Reads to the Blind podcast. You can get more information at audiblelocalledger.org. Stay tuned for today's reading. Hi, my name's Eric, and I'll be reading you selections from the e-edition of today's Cape Cod Times. Today's date is Tuesday, April 2nd of 2024, and we'll start with the weather. As we always do, regular listeners are well aware, that's how we begin our broadcast. Today, cloudy, little rain late in the afternoon, high of 45 expected. Tonight, overcast with a touch of rain, 40 degrees in the overnight. Across the Cape and Islands tomorrow, Wednesday, increasingly windy with rain. There's some talk of nor'easter, possibly, but that's all to be determined. As we have learned, that's very questionable. High of 42, low of 40 tomorrow. So it warms up this week, although it does get pretty wet. Thursday, cloudy, windy, and warmer with a shower expected. Friday, mostly cloudy and breezy with a shower. Same thing expected on Saturday. High of 46, low of 37. So a little chillier in the overnight over the weekend, but pretty warm and wet for the next few days. Does not look like a nor'easter, though, at least not for the Cape. Other parts of the state may get more severe weather. Sunrise today was at 6:22 a.m. It will set at 7:08 p.m. We will have 12 hours, 46 minutes of daylight. Now, moving to the front of the paper, where the lottery results are kept, in addition to the news, and we read the lottery results because, well, somebody asked for them. If there's something you would like read to people who are blind or print disabled, you can email us at info@audiblelocalledger.org or call us at 508-539-2030 and we'll consider reading it. And if you miss any of the information that we share in our readings, you can always go to audiblelocalledger.org and in the upper right corners, the archived readings tab. Click on that. You'll find a week's worth of our newspapers, and you can catch up on all that you might have missed. We also keep our shopping guides up there for the week, and we have our podcast with the Mass Commission for the Blind up there. We also have a literature readings tab, and that stays up there in perpetuity. All of that is free for people who are blind or print disabled at audiblelocalledger.org. For the latest results, we go to masslottery.com. And for the numbers game of Monday, April 1st, April Fool's Day, this is no joke, in the midday drawing, 3037. Again, yesterday's midday drawing of the numbers game, 3037. Last night's drawing of the numbers game for Monday, April 1st, 4516. Again, last night's evening drawing of the numbers game for Monday, April 1st, 4516. Powerball results for Monday, April 1st, 19, 24, 40, 42, and 56, with 23, the bonus number. Mass cash results for Monday, April 1st, 11, 17, 19, 26, 34. Lucky for life for Monday, April 1st, 2, 11, 29, 43, and 45, with 5, the bonus number. And Megabucks rounds out our lottery results for Monday, April 1st, with 1, 3, 6, 9, 27, and 34. Good luck to all who play. Remember us if you win. Now, heading back to the Cape Cod Times, dated today, Tuesday, April 2nd. The headline on the cover reads, Cape Woman Bought Camper When Her Rent Rose. Town Says She Must Move, by Susan Vaughn, as a special to the Cape Cod Times in Marston's Mills. Melissa Sleeper has been living in her camper on a friend's property in Marston's Mills since November. After 5 years, she had to leave her two-bedroom apartment in Falmouth when her landlord raised the rent beyond what she could afford. Buying a used camper for housing seemed like a good idea, she said. Now, though, she's been told she has to move the camper. A Barnstable Town ordinance does not allow occupied campers on private property for more than 20 days a year. Her boyfriend, her registered service dog, and a cat also live with her. "I knew nothing about camping. I've never been camping," she said during a recent interview inside the camper. Sleeper is not alone in her housing situation on Cape Cod. The Homeless Prevention Council in Orleans does not keep statistics on the number of people living in campers when they lose their permanent homes. "But it happens," said Hadley Luddy, the nonprofit CEO. "We've seen situations of people staying in campers. It's not unusual," Luddy said. "It's another example of the seriousness of the housing crisis." The council covers Lower Cape towns, from Harwich to Provincetown. There used to be more people living in winter rentals who would stay in campgrounds during the summer, but now that's disappearing, giving way to highly priced winter rentals, Luddy said. Workers aged 25 to 54 make up the largest group affected by the housing crisis and who do not have permanent homes, Luddy said. She urged people in that situation to contact the council or Housing Assistance Corporation in Hyannis. "We see people wait too long to get help," she said. "It's hard to find a permanent home on Cape Cod." In Sleeper's case, she said her situation is not due to her lack of effort in finding a permanent home. Sleeper, who's 42, works 10 hours a day, 6 days a week as a pizza restaurant manager. But she said she couldn't find an apartment for under $3,000 a month. Having pets also limited her options. "We couldn't find a place that would take animals," she said. She looked into parking the camper at a state or private campground, but found that the stay is often limited to 2 weeks, and the campgrounds aren't year-round. Towns, she said, should not allow local people to become homeless. "This is our only option," she said, of parking her camper on private property. The camper is a one-bedroom, 15-year-old Bristol Bay, parked at the rear of a large private lot with a single-family house. It must be attached to a vehicle to move. The camper's mainly hidden from the street by a high fence, except at the entrance road. A co-owner of the property, when contacted by the Times by phone, declined to comment. "A rent increase that was hard to budget," reads the subhead. The rent Sleeper paid on her last place, the apartment in Falmouth, started at $1,700 a month. Then it went to $1,750 and then jumped to $1,950. "The $1,950 was hard to budget," she said. She expressed gratitude to her boss, who loaned her the money to buy the camper. The camper cost $12,000, plus about $3,000 for renovations, such as redoing the floors, removing a wall, and installing a refrigerator, Sleeper said. The camper has a kitchen, running water, and a bathroom with a shower. "The wastewater tanks get pumped out at least every 2 weeks or less," she said. Kevin O'Neill, the town building inspector responsible for Marston's Mills, said he became aware of the occupied camper when he visited the property on a separate complaint. O'Neill notified the property owner of the camper violation. "The property owner is the one held responsible," he said. Sleeper said she wasn't contacted by any town inspectors. The town hasn't fined the owner for the camper violation because there's an allowed appeal period, O'Neill said. For an occupied camper violation, the property owner can appeal to the town clerk within 30 days or to the Building Code Appeals Board within 45 days, he said, adding the situation could eventually end up in court. "Unoccupied campers parked on the owner's private property are allowed without a permit," O'Neill said. Town building inspectors in Barnstable often encounter people living in campers. "It's hard to control," O'Neill said, adding when the inspectors spot them, they issue a notice to vacate. On Thursday, Sleeper applied for a permit for her camper and paid $129 in fees based on a receipt that was reviewed by the Cape Cod Times. O'Neill said Friday her application for the permit was received, but it has to be signed off by the town building commissioner. Any action could take 30 days to issue a permit or deny it, he said. But Sleeper did the right thing by filing for a permit, which could allow her more time. Her options, he said, are to vacate the camper, remove it from the property, or do what she did, file for a permit. Keeping local, moving into the Cape and Islands section. Dog bite in Wellfleet sends a 2-year-old to a Boston hospital, by Zane Razak. A 2-year-old child was flown to a Boston hospital by a medical helicopter after being bitten by a pit bull mix dog at a Wellfleet home, according to police. Around 2:15 p.m. on Sunday, the Wellfleet Police and Fire Departments were sent to 100 East Hill Road after receiving reports of a dog bite. The fire department brought the injured child to Cape Cod Gateway Airport in Barnstable, where the child was flown to the hospital. The injuries are not considered life-threatening, and all parties are known, police said in a press release. Wellfleet police are investigating the incident. Deputy Police Chief Michael Turner told the Times, "The child sustained a soft tissue injury to the cheek. The animal is still in the custody of the owner in Wellfleet, and dangerousness restrictions will be placed on the dog," he said. This is your reader, Eric, just saying that the reason that the child was probably flown to the hospital was to get to a plastic surgeon. When bites are on the face, it's very important to get seen by a plastic surgeon right away. The next headline in the Cape and Islands section of the Cape Cod Times that's dated today, Tuesday, April 2nd, "Town meeting starts Monday in Falmouth. Here's what you need to know," by Walker Armstrong. Proposals for updated town-owned buildings, implementing a real estate transfer fee for affordable housing, and financing a pilot program to evaluate the effectiveness of an alternative form of wastewater treatment called urine diversion are just a few issues Falmouth voters will consider at Monday's annual town meeting. Those items are among 37 articles on the warrant, several of which address town finances, articles 5, 6, and 8 through 18, and funding for capital improvements and other projects, notably articles 7, 19, and 20. Another article relates to a program to remodel or rebuild the aging East Branch of the Falmouth Public Library. That's article 37. Among the most pressing articles up for a vote, according to Falmouth Town Manager Mike Renshaw, are those related to a study of administrative positions and salaries in town government, funding for capital improvements and other projects, implementing the real estate transfer fee, and the pilot program to study urine diversion. Renshaw said Article 4, which seeks to amend the town's position classification plan, aims to evaluate and adjust the salaries of director level and above technical, administrative, and management positions within town government. "We wanted to be more competitive. We wanted to certainly retain the great employees that we have. But also, when we have vacancies, with this reclassification study, to adjust our salary ranges," Renshaw said. "It's going to allow us to retain our good employees and then do a better job of recruiting when we have vacancies. The program will allow the town to raise the bottom of the salary range while also enhancing the top-end salaried positions," he said. Articles 7 and 19 deal with funding capital improvement projects. "We have a 10-year capital improvement plan here in the town of Falmouth," Renshaw said. "We've just recently done a comprehensive look at it, and we've realized that we have about $520 million, so $500 million worth of capital expenses over the next 10 years. The town seeks to move about $5.5 million of free cash into a capital stabilization fund," that's Article 7, "to help offset or reduce the impact of capital projects on property taxes." Renshaw said this would be done so Falmouth has additional cash on hand for large projects. "Rather than having to look at considering raising property taxes to help pay for these larger projects, we will every year slowly put additional monies into this capital stabilization fund to hedge against rising costs," Renshaw said. Article 19 deals directly with capital improvements to the town's 80 aging buildings, such as town hall, schools, and others. It would establish a comprehensive town-owned building evaluation study to assess the buildings in need of repair. "So we have about 80 structures or buildings that are in various stages of disrepair, quite honestly," Renshaw said. "I don't think the town has done as good a job as we should have to periodically inventory and assess the condition of the buildings." We're at the midway point of our half-hour reading of the Cape Cod Times today. Today's date is Tuesday, April 2nd of 2024. Regular listeners are aware it's at this stage in the reading that we move to a different kind of local news, the obituaries and death notices that are printed in that day's newspaper. Our first obituary in today's Cape Cod Times is of Rachel Helen Ziemba of Fairfax. With great sorrow, we announce that Rachel Helen Ziemba of Fairfax, Virginia, born July 8, 1971 in Falmouth, passed on March 27th after a long, courageous fight. She attended Miss Hall School in Pittsfield, then went on to study history at Muhlenberg College. She earned her MBA in finance from George Mason University and had a successful finance and accounting career as a controller for government defense contractors. Rachel was a fiercely independent, creative person who devoted much of her free time to enjoying her dogs, Montana and Kaya, the outdoors, gardening, cooking, music, photography, and woodworking. Her sense of adventure took her on many domestic and international travels. She'll be in our hearts forever. Relatives and friends are invited to attend her graveside service this coming Saturday, April 6th, at the Katomet Cemetery, 1091 County Road in Katomet, at 10 a.m. Any donations may be made in her memory to the following organizations: Miss Hall's School, 492 Holmes Road in Pittsfield, Mass. National Spiritual Assembly of the Baha'i, 1233 Central Street in Evanston, Illinois. Vanderbilt University Medical Center, 1211 Medical Center Drive in Nashville, for research at the Vanderbilt Ingrar Cancer Center. The other obituary in today's Cape Cod Times is of Jean M. Ports of Milford, who passed peacefully at the age of 82 on March 16th. Jean was born in Newark, New Jersey, July 15th of 1941. She graduated from Central Regional High School in Bayville, New Jersey in 59 and received a bachelor's degree in education from Monmouth College in New Jersey in 1963. Jean made her living as a teacher, a career she had aspired to since she was a child. She was even the vice president of Future Teachers of America in high school. She began teaching in 1964, and she didn't stop until retirement. She taught every grade from kindergarten to sixth and across the states of New Jersey, Wyoming, New Hampshire, and Massachusetts. Every minute spent in the classroom was a joyful one for her. She retired in 2001, less than a year after her husband, Robert Bob Ports, with whom she moved to Milford, New Hampshire, the following year. Jean loved traveling with her husband, filling almost every summer with cruises and RV trips across the country, eventually visiting almost all 50 states. Where Bob was dedicated to caring for their yard, Jean was dedicated to caring for their home. She loved hosting parties for her friends and family there, and especially loved decorating for Christmas each year. She also loved dancing, reading, learning about history, hosting parties for her friends and family. It was often said by those who knew her that she was the best storyteller. The calling hours will be held on Monday, April 22nd, from 5 to 7 p.m. in the Smith & Heald Funeral Home, 63 Elm Street in Milford, New Hampshire. A funeral service will be held on Tuesday, April 23rd, at 11 a.m. in the First Congregational Church, 10 Union Street, Milford, New Hampshire, and a reception will be held at the parish house directly following the service. That concludes the obituaries listed in the Cape Cod Times for Tuesday, April 2nd of 2024. Moving on in the paper to the sports section, a piece we don't always cover, but we do want to try and keep it local, and there is a headline that reads, 35 Cape Cod players who are set to star in high school boys lacrosse, by Courtney Jacobs. The 2023 Cape Cod High School boys lacrosse season had 9 teams qualify for the postseason. Falmouth in Division 3 and Sandwich Division 4 both made it to the state finals but came up just short in the end. Nauset in Division 2 and Nantucket Division 4 both made the Elite 8 which shows the amount of talent Cape Cod has to offer. Here is a list of players that will not only continue to showcase their skills on Cape Cod, but put the state on notice that Cape teams, they're here to stay. Doug Carr from Barnstable. Carr's a senior, two-time captain for the Red Hawks. Ryan Hayden of Bourne. Hayden's a junior. He'll be a key contributor on offense for the Canalmen. Brett Lussier of Bourne is a senior that will help the Canalmen this season. Ty Hawks from Bourne is a sophomore that does everything for the Canalmen. Harrison Barbieri of Cape Cod Academy is a junior attack man for the Seahawks. Landon O'Neill of Cape Cod Academy is an eighth grade attack man, but was the Seahawks' leading scorer last season, despite missing three games. Brady Livingston of Cape Cod Academy is a junior midfielder that also takes faceoffs for the Seahawks. Tanner Agurkis of Dennis Yarmouth is a senior that'll play in the midfield for the Dolphins. Teddy Angelillo of Dennis Yarmouth is a sophomore who'll be one of the key offensive players for the Dolphins. Charlie Blake of Dennis Yarmouth will be one of the defensive leaders for the Dolphins. Tommy Bushy of Falmouth, after playing backup goalie the last two seasons, this senior will start in net this year. He'll play at Bridgeton Academy for a post-grad year next season. Cole Gaudet of Falmouth, the senior attackman, is following up an all-star season. Jackson Falcone of Falmouth is a senior midfielder that was also a league all-star last season. He led the Clippers in scoring in their last playoff run. Matt Brown of Falmouth Academy is a sophomore attackman that scored 10 goals last year. Christian Hanoyan of Falmouth Academy is a senior co-captain and defenseman that led the team last year in takeaways and goals. Drew Reeves of Falmouth Academy is a senior co-captain and defenseman for the Mariners. Aiden Conley of Martha's Vineyard is a senior midfielder. Liam Conley of Martha's Vineyard is a senior midfielder and the number one face-off player for the Vineyarders. Chase Toomey of Martha's Vineyard is the top returning defenseman for the Vineyarders. Dominic Mattiotto of Mashpee is a junior midfielder for the Falcons. Vinny Panetti of Mashpee is a junior and one of the key defenders for the Falcons. Max Smith of Mashpee will be a key player for the Falcons' offense. Max Barrett of Monomoy is a senior defenseman who was the captain and a league all-star for the Sharks a season ago. Braden Darling of Monomoy is a senior defenseman, team captain, and a league all-star. Tamir Khalil of Monomoy is a junior attackman and does face-offs for the Sharks. Colton Chambers of Nantucket is a senior captain, four-year starter, and attackman. Griffin Starr of Nantucket is a senior captain and defender for the Whalers. Riley Meehan of Nauset is a senior midfielder, returning as a three-year starter. Brendan Pino of Nauset is a returning starter and will be a long-stick midfielder for the Warriors. Logan Poulin of Nauset is a junior who leads the faceoffs and is a midfielder for the Warriors. Shane Corcoran of Sandwich is a senior captain and the goalie for the Blue Knights. Devin Mahoney of Sandwich is another senior captain that will lead the defense for the Blue Knights. He is heading to West Virginia and will play club lacrosse. Avery Richardson of Sandwich is the third Blue Knights senior captain on this list, and he'll be an attack man. Jaden Barton of Upper Cape is a senior captain who'll be an attack man for the Rams. And Ryan Hansen of Upper Cape is a senior who'll be another attack man for the Rams. All done with local news. The headline reads, Manufacturing Growth in March Sparks Hope. New Orders and Production Measures Rebound by Lucia Mudakani of Reuters in Washington. U.S. manufacturing grew for the first time in 1.5 years in March as production rebounded sharply and new orders increased. But employment at factories remained subdued amid sizable layoff activity and prices for inputs pushed higher. The survey from the Institute for Supply Management, the ISM, on Monday suggested that the sector, which has been battered by higher interest rates, was on the mend, though risks remain from rising raw material prices. Timothy Fiore, who chairs the ISM's Manufacturing Business Survey Committee, said demand remains at the early stages of recovery with clear signs of improving conditions. While the manufacturing rebound is a boost for the economy's growth prospects, the rise in raw material prices suggested goods inflation could pick up in the months ahead. Goods deflation was the key driver of an inflation slowdown last year. If the contraction of manufacturing activity is over, far too soon to say, and price pressures are building in manufacturing, which appears to have been happening for the last 3 months, then this would have implications for the path for interest rates in 2024, said Conrad De Quadros, senior economic advisor at Brain Capital in New York. The ISM said its manufacturing PMI increased to 50.3 last month. That's the highest and first reading above 50 since September 2022, from 47.8 in February of this year. The rebound ended 16 straight months of contraction in manufacturing, which accounts for 10.4% of the economy. That was the longest such stretch since the August 2000, January 2002 period. A PMI reading above 50 indicates growth in the manufacturing sector. Economists polled by Reuters had forecast the PMI would rise to 48.4. The ISM and other factory surveys had grossly overstated the weakness in manufacturing, which has been constrained by higher borrowing costs. Government data Thursday showed manufacturing output rose at an annualized rate of 0.9% in the fourth quarter. It grew 1.6% in 2023 compared to 0.8% in 2022. Though consumer spending has shifted to services, demand for goods remains supported. Nine industries, including textile mills, paper products, primary metals, chemical products, and transportation equipment, reported growth last month. Electrical equipment, appliances and components, machinery, and computer and electronic products were among the six industries reporting a contraction. Commentary from businesses was fairly upbeat. Makers of chemical products reported that performance continues to defy projections of a downturn in activity, adding that demand remains strong and the pipeline for orders is robust. Transportation equipment manufacturers said they were expecting to see orders and production pick up for the second quarter. Makers of wood products reported that business activity is up, adding many manufacturers are anticipating better business in the second quarter. But manufacturers of machinery struck a cautious note, saying they were noticing an increase in suppliers' selectiveness regarding orders they quote and take. Makers of paper products were worried about energy pricing. Computer and electronic products manufacturers said demand remains soft, but optimism is high that orders are just on the horizon. U.S. stocks were trading lower. The dollar rose against a basket of currencies, and U.S. Treasury prices fell. And with that, we've come to the end of our reading of today's Cape Cod Times, dated today, Tuesday, April 2nd of 2024. This is your reader, Eric, saying be well, be safe, look after each other, and remember our veterans. Bye for now.